Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is June 21st, 2004. Today's session number is ERD 2004-06. Today's speaker is Dan Erlander. And the lesson for today is St. Francis of Assisi, Francis, Miss Summoned. Let's listen in.
I'm Erlander, and I'm from Whidbey Island in north of Seattle, and I'm retired and somewhat, and I'm a retired pastor, and I'm both help out at the church on Whidbey Island, and then also do traveling and teaching, and then I'm going to beginning in September helping at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in downtown Seattle. So that's been a new kind of life on weekends, but we'll still stay on Whidbey Island. So if you still have to say this to the person recording, I'm beginning now. And my primary source for these sessions will be this Marvel comic book. Francis, Brother of the Universe, his complete life story. And what I like about this book is that Francis was 5'3" tall.
Yes.
I guess you can. And what I like about this, it makes Francis, he looks like he's about 6'5", a basketball player in here, and real athletic, so, yeah. So that, then, as kind of side reading, then I have these books, but three of them are in the bookstore, these three. This is an older edition, but this is very good, and it's cheap, so it's only, I think, about $8. And very good. And then what I'll be using two of these sessions is a new book, fairly new, Donald Spoto, The Reluctant Saint. And this book does what's been done with biblical studies too, the search for the historical Saint Francis. So I won't say any more about that. I want to get right into our introduction today because I have a goal is to kind of get ahead a little so towards the end of the week we can spend more time on Francis and his experience in the Muslim world and his peacemaking work in Egypt and trying to stop the Crusades. We'll fit in so beautifully with the program for this week on the Middle East. But Barb will be sharing, and also the sessions we'll have on the Mideast. So, but let's just start quickly. What are some of your impressions of Francis? Just when you think St. Francis.
Birds.
Yeah, I had a Franciscan say that if he was always holding birds and had one on his shoulders, think what his robe would have looked like. What's another?
The Prayer of St. Francis.
The Prayer of St. Francis, which was written after the First World War. And it was written just as a peace prayer, and it got connected to Francis, but it certainly shows his spirit.
Sort of the radical transformation from his life before as a rich person to this person.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, we'll look at that today. So yeah. I started St. Francis in Holden here in 1983, was the 700th anniversary of Francis, and beginning of the summer, I really realized nothing was scheduled, so that's when I picked up the Engelbert book and read it and gave sessions on Francis. And then Lyak and Holden, that exploded into Francis festivals. And the highlight was when we recreated the day when Francis threw all kinds of bolts of cloth out of his father's shop. So we threw bolts of cloth out of windows and all that. But that's really what started me. And since then, I kind of call it my hobby. You know, while we do this serious biblical studies and everything, studying Francis and reading about Francis has been a hobby. But it's more than a hobby, because it's been a saint who, in many ways, has touched my life. And you'll know that if you ever visit our home, you trip over St. Francis's. So that's a little beginning. And I want also. I have a concern, too, that Lutherans and other Reformed traditions, we don't, I don't think we do enough with saints and the great saints of the church. And so that's part of my program. Okay, any other thing that you think of with St. Francis before we move on?
Think of prayer.
But
think of Claire.
Yeah, that's why I had this little picture of Francis and Claire. Did most of you see Brother, Son, Sister Moon years ago? The movie, it was a 60s movie, and check it out sometime. It's very romanticized, and it has, Claire and Francis as two young teenagers running through the flowers in the fields below Assisi, and when in reality is that Francis was much older. Also, the one fun part of that movie was while the hierarchy was having their boring kind of LBW mass in the cathedral, then all of the hippies were off with St. Francis having a folk mass. So it's fun. But well, what I'd like to begin with is just the context of the life of Francis in the time in which he lived and he served. And born 1181 or 2, we're not sure, and then died 1226. Now, these were not normal times. It was a time of great, great upheaval. And Francis was born Assisi, you see there, which is still the province of Umbria. And Franciscan followers still often call Umbria the Galilee of Italy. The Galilee of Italy, which I think is beautiful. I want to start by showing what life was like before the great upheaval that was really caused by the Crusades. For centuries, life had been neatly ordered between the nobility and the common people, and in Italian, the majoris and the minoris. The nobility and the common people, most of whom were serfs. What was so stable about this system is that each side benefited, so it was to everyone's advantage to keeping it going, because the nobility that owned all the land had the serfs to farm their land. And then in response to that, the nobility gave to the common people and the serf a safety net. Of two things. One was food. They kept enough food from their farming to eat. And then the second thing they offered was protection from invading armies. So this system was very neat and worked. But then come the Crusades, which we'll talk about later this week. But part of the Crusades was that some of the common people were craftspeople and merchants, the minority, but some of the common people. And especially the merchant people began to follow the Crusaders to the east, And then they found all of the items to bring back to sell. And gradually their wealth went up, and along with that, their power. Until by the time Francis was born, it was a real battle. Between the old nobility and the rising wealth and power of the craftspeople. And then what really changed things, especially in a place like Assisi, was that the merchants gained so much power that they were able to drive the nobility out of the cities. And so you had a situation where merchants would have been more wealthy. In fact, some nobility by the time of Francis were poor. And so driving them out, then they created city-states. Like Assisi was a city-state with the city in the middle and then the surrounding land. And then the safety net was gone. That had been true under the nobility. So you enter into a time of grinding poverty. The Engelbert there said, never before had the little man, as he called it, been the victim of so much social injustice. For the common person, that are part of these city-states. They had no rights, they were cheap labor, many were unemployed, hunger, disease, grinding poverty, many had to beg to keep from starvation. And then you were thrown away, for example, if you got an injury in work, you were thrown away because there were plenty to take their place. And also, when you became too old to work, you were also simply thrown away. It was what one writer has called the wretched proletariat in the outskirts of the city.
Dan, what do you mean thrown away?
Well, you're no use, so there's no safety net. So it means you just have to beg. And so this would have been the rise of people on the streets begging. Because there was, as there had been before. Is that clear? Yeah, there had been before the safety net. So on top of that, the diseases that were there, I mean, to read about normal life in this time is just excruciating just to read about it. And now it's even more so because of the diseases that were coming back from the Crusades, that people did not have immunity to. There were regular epidemics, typhoid, malaria, syphilis, and no pure water, poor quality of food. You can just go on and on. And no wonder the religious life of these people was getting ready for heaven. And getting yourself in place and being loyal to the church because life was miserable in many, many ways. But as we see when we get on with the story, it also is filled with a lot of parties and celebrations too. Then the other thing with these city-states now, they would vie with each other for power and for the control of trade routes. And if cities had a rival city that they hated, and they developed names for the people that lived. It was like when I went to Moline High School, it was when we played Rock Island, you know, that you had names for them. You know, they were the big enemy. Anybody here from Illinois? But only it was much more serious because this meant war was uplifted and going against another city and everything that we know that's bad about war the desire for war, the glorification of war, the dehumanizing of the people of the other cities. And when one city defeated another, the city was razed and destruction, burning of crops, massacre, rape. And then also the unemployed of the poor serfs, then they would be found in the army and in the war against another city. They would be the foot soldiers that would go ahead of the sons and the merchants, you know, who would be on their glorious horses. And it was possible at this time for merchants to buy themselves into knighthood. And so that gives, these were not normal times, and times of this desperate poverty. Many, many lepers, it was much more than what we would call leprosy today, but any kind of skin disease or any kind of boils or what do you call it when you hurt all over? Shingles, thank you. Okay, now this leads us to just seeing how St. Francis now fit into this whole system. And before I enter St. Francis' life, just a reminder, a big part of these wars against cities was to capture the children of the rich on the other side and then hold them for a high ransom, prisoners of war. Now, there were hospitals, monasteries, cathedrals. They were built by the rich, often to atone for all of their crimes and their violence. The church was at the height of its worldly power. 1198, with the ascent of Innocent III, who would bring the papacy to the very height of its worldly power, which included armies, soldiers, vying for lands and territories with the Holy Roman Empire. So Francis then, in this, was one of the city-states, Assisi. And who has been there to Assisi? You're the ones that... you're the ones that can help me. We are going, finally, we're going to get there in October. We already have our hotels and our airline tickets, I think. Do you know where they are? A beautiful small city on the side of a hill that goes up the mountain above the city, a castle. From the city, these beautiful views of this valley, rich valley. Can you, who have been there, add anything? When the sun sets, I guess, the setting sun on the buildings.
It's beautiful. It's sort of, the stone is sort of a pinkish stone anyway, and then the sun sets, and it just glows. It's a little city, it just glows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just gorgeous. It's our favorite place in Italy.
Good. Should we plan a Holden tour?
Yeah.
And I won't go into all the different places of the bishop's palace and the churches and everything, but two things to keep in mind that are important places. 3/4 of a mile from Assisi is the Church of San Damiano, and then down the plain further, the Porta Ancula, but also St. Mary's, and I find that even easier to pronounce. So I'll call it St. Mary's. Okay, Francis is born to probably the wealthiest merchant, if not one of the most wealthy merchants in Assisi, and it's Pietro. And Pica is his mother. Then Pietro, as a cloth merchant, made many trips, especially to France, and he loved France. So Francis was born when Pietro was in France, came back and found out they had baptized the child and also named him John the Baptist. And Pietro was incensed. So, and it was too late to rename him, so he did it anyway. And called him France. So that's why we have St. Francis, called him France. Their last name was Giovanni. And, no, I mean Bernardone, and Giovanni would be John the Baptist. So, and San Francisco sounds much better for a name of a city on the sea than Giovanni. So, probably was, no, well, never. Now, as a wealthy cloth merchant, Pietro's dream was an expectation was that Francis would take over the business. He was a good businessman by good, knew how to make money with a system of what is called aggressive capitalism. And he sold colorful brocaded cloaks, vests, furred hats, gold collars, and gray stocking caps. And part of the reason this was so important, that wealth was measured not by where you lived, and houses and were crowded into Assisi, small and dark. Most of the living was public outside. So how you showed your wealth is by what you wore. And so men would vie with each other to have these fanciest dress. So I like to call Pietro the Calvin Klein of Umbria. So men vied with one another, quote, from in wearing the richest and most showy textures. Francis did in Assisi go to school for about 3 years, where he learned to read. Then so much of his learning was just looking what was going on around him. He loved the minstrels that came through, and he would learn their songs. He loved the stories that would come through of King Arthur's court. And very early he became just very enamored with knights and the knightly court and the ladies, and had a dream that someday he would be a knight. And he had even more of a dream like than that in one biography, that he really believed that he would be world famous someday. And how did you do that in that time? To finally gain knighthood, it would take both war and payment. What else here? The poetry of chivalry, of knightly chivalry, and then the minstrels, and he would copy them, and he was a player of the lyre, and he would learn the songs of the minstrels. And now Pietro and Pica were, of course, everyone was Roman Catholic, but Pietro was nominal, whatever that means, inactive member. And he was more concerned about his wealth and rising social scale. Pica was meek, submissive, retiring, but once in a while she really stood up. And those were important times. Francis grew up, his greatest skill was spending his father's money. And he spent it on what Pietro was proud of, and that is Francis threw the best parties. And sumptuous parties for his friends as a teenager. And these parties were wild, liquor, drunkenness. We would call all kinds of the words like carousing, and singing and music. And the important thing is Francis had the money to buy all the best drink and the best food. And he was also like everyone in your high school had that one student that was really funny, you know, that was kind of the class comedian. Well, that was Francis. He kept everyone entertained at these parties. And then he was also a folk song leader. and would keep everyone singing, and then these wild parties would flow out into the streets and up and down and serenading young women in from their windows. Can't you just see it? And this is what was Francis was charming, endearing, affectionate, extravagant, jokes, comedy, and now he needs to be famous. So how you go to war? Chivalry in battle, the pathway to glory and to being a knight. His background before going to war, or why there was a war, is that when he was 15 years old, the merchants of the town decided they were strong enough to attack the castle. Is it still standing up there? The castle or the walls? They were strong enough to attack the nobility that held the top of the hill. And Francis was involved in building some of the rock and the other stone work in preparation for this battle, which the merchants won, formed a communal city, and then, of course, ended the safety nets and for the poor and began the extreme exploitation. Now, the nobles that got away from this war ran for safety to Perugia. Do you see there to the left in the little Perugia? That's where they ran for safety, which triggered a war between these two cities. Perugia, which was larger, and Assisi. And the war lasted for 10 years. And it was a war of attrition, of just killing and killing and king killing. And again, now Francis went to battle and was captured and became a prisoner of war. And he was put into a real dungeon-like, wet, miserable area that was part of the ruins from former kingdoms and civilizations that were there. And there he contacted malaria and who knows whatever diseases. The water was putrid, the food was terrible. He was there for a long, long time. Became more sick and more sick, and finally the negotiations with his father were made, and so he was released and brought back a broken young man. And now he convalesced at home for a very long period of time, just gradually regaining his strength. And now when he did regain his strength, in case you thought now it's a time of conversion, he's back to the parties and throwing the parties again. And now still, but as I read in one place, he threw these parties, paid for now with his father's money, with less enthusiasm. But now comes another chance when he is well enough for glory. The papal armies and the Holy Roman Empire are going to war for territories. And if you ever have problems with your bishop, they don't have armies anymore to kill people. So off he goes, off to war. But now, his father becomes so invested in going to this much more important war. So the father sells off some of his best property to buy Francis all of the equipment that he needs, the finest horse, the armor, the clothing needed to go to war. And if you can imagine the narrow streets in Assisi as he was going off on his horse and the crowds cheering on either side of the streets as he went through on one of the most glorious horses anyone had ever seen. And he got all the way to Let's see if I have this written down. Did I Spoleto? No, I didn't get it on the map. But that's how far he got, about 20 miles. And he wasn't feeling well. He was still somewhat weak from his malaria. Wasn't feeling well that night in a tent. And there he heard a voice. Now it's hard to try to figure out what these dreams were like, similar to the dreams we read about in the Bible in ancient times. And this first dream was a voice. A voice that said, from whom can you expect more, the master or the servant? And Francis answers, well, of course, the master. And then the voice said, why follow the servant instead of the master on whom the servant depends? Francis' decision after hearing this voice was to go AWOL and back to Assisi, but just in case there'd be some happiness at home, he gave away everything, including his armor, but all of his clothing, to a poor person of the nobility that had no equipment. And he returns to Assisi with basically nothing. Now, do you think Pietro is happy? And in fact, Pietro now goes into a rage, is embarrassed, and he tells Francis, you'll go back into the cloth business. If you can't make it as a soldier, at least you'll be a good cloth merchant. And now that becomes the program of Pietro for his son. He starts trying to have more feasts, but he doesn't have a lot of heart for it. And this is when he begins to take time off from the cloth business to just wander around, and he finds caves, and he sits in the caves, and he starts praying. And how long does this go?
11:45.
Oh, okay. Thank you. You'll be my. I want to finish our part for today so we can share some things together. Now, 3/4 of a mile below Assisi is San Damiano. And this was a broken down church that still had an elderly priest that lived there. And when Francis was on one of his wanderings, he wandered into this dark, old, crumbling church. And it is there that he saw before him, that was still intact, was the cross that had been over the altar. And on this cross was an image of the crucified Jesus. And I have to find it. I couldn't find it yet in one of my books. But you've probably seen it. It's there were probably thousands in the souvenir stores, weren't there? Over there in Assisi. But when you look at that, the face of Jesus is kind. Kind. And it's again that Francis heard a voice, and the voice said, Francis, go build my church. It is falling into ruins. Now, Francis tended to be a literalist, so now he has heard this voice, and he goes and starts buying stones and hauling stones to San Damiano and to reconstruct this church. And then he really pulls one. He goes and sells one of his father's horses and then takes bolts and bolts of cloth out of the shop and sells all of them, takes the money to San Damiano, and then gives it to the priest who knew he would be in trouble and refused it, So Francis still left all of the money. It would have been a huge amount. Left the money in the church. And now, now Pietro is really in a rage when he finds this out. So he would do what any father would do, you know, to discipline one's child. He turned the basement storage room into a prison and threw his son in there, locked the door. It was open once a day with some food and some water. And there was just a simple negotiation. When you decide to straighten up and be a cloth merchant, we'll let you out. So now, this is one time that mother stands up for son. Pietro went off on a business trip, and she simply let him out. Let him out of their home, cute home prison. He goes back to the caves and hides. On the way there is gossip about him, and he is ridiculed on his way. People throw stones at him, throw mud at him because of the stories. And so then father comes back from the trip and finds out that mother has released Francis. So, and then with the money that has been stolen by Francis, he decides to have Francis arrested and to bring charges against him. And if you think the gossip circles in a small city are really flowing, now they really are. Pietro is bringing his son to trial, but the government, the mayor of Assisi, won't touch this because the money was given to the church, so it has to go to an ecclesiastical trial. And so now we meet Bishop Gubbio, who is the Bishop of Assisi, and by the way, will be a supporter and a father figure for Francis for the rest of his life, this bishop. And so the trial is at the front of the cathedral, and everyone is there because this is where the action is today, and including Francis's father and mother. There, Francis asked to be excused, and when the charges are brought before him, and he returns through another exit out of the cathedral, and he's stark naked. And he's also carrying his clothes, and he's also carrying all of the money that was stolen. And he places the clothes at the feet of his father, and then also he places the money. And then he announces to the crowds that are gathered there, points to Pietro and says, "This is no longer my father. I have one father, and then our Father who art in heaven." Then the shock was not the nudity, because people, I mean, you saw so much nudity in people that were what we would call mentally ill. You saw so much nudity just as there were no toilets, no bathrooms. You know, these were not puritanical times. So but the shock was that he dismissed his father from ever being his father again. And there is no account of any kind of reconciliation ever happening. Bishop did what any kind bishop would do, get a cloak put around Francis, and he goes off into the woods singing, but he is really broken with every possible support he could have in his life. Then he goes back to San Damiano, and he begins to beg for stones. He thinks his only life calling is to repair churches. This is his summon out to be. church repair person because Jesus told him to from the cross, build my church. And he also starts giving simple sermons, begs for food, and is mocked. Then continuing to restore churches, and especially the one called Santa Maria, that really became the heart and center of the Franciscan movement as it went out to the world. One day on the feast of St. Matthias in 1208, Francis went to Mass at the church of St. Mary's. And at that Mass, the gospel for that day of St. Matthias was Matthew 10, 5 through 10. I'll read it. Just picture this medieval church, the high Roman Mass. The scripture is read, and it was in the language of the people at that time. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Go nowhere among the Gentiles, enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, proclaim the good news. The kingdom of heaven has come near. Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons, and you received without payment. Give without payment. Take no gold or silver or copper in your belts, no bag for your journey, no two tunics or sandals or a staff, for a laborer deserves their food. And Francis went running out from this Mass, and he had been summoned out, for thy shall be, to literally follow Matthew 10 for the rest of his life. And that was to own absolutely nothing, to have no coins, no bag, to beg, to heal the sick, to give to the poor, and to never again in his life to wear sandals, and to have no staff. You know, so this will be his life. He has been called. The day of decision, this is what I want, I seek, I long to do with all my heart. Now, so we'll pick up from there as his mission begins tomorrow. But now, good. I was as fast as I hoped to be, and nobody was going like this. That's a sign for moving right along. So we got this far, but let's respond to this part. If you have observations or inspirations or questions or filling in any kind of blanks that I can be helpful with. Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
You say he summoned his father. What about his mother? Is that a relationship?
We don't know anything either about his relationship with his mother.
She let him out of jail. So.
Yeah.
She left him anyway.
Yeah. I'll have to search if there's anything that's said about that. But, my guess is that she prayed for him the rest of her life. That's kind of.
All mothers are kind of like that.
Yeah, that's a heart thing. Yeah. Hey, there was one.
What was the time frame here? How old was he?
Okay.
His time?
About 26, it was 1208.
Yeah, 1208. Yeah. So he was what?
About 26.
Yeah, 26. Mm-hmm. And in those times, this was a long time to not have started your call yet. You didn't live that long. You know, so.
I just wondered his when he went out from the church and he was summoned. Was that just? I'm thinking about his relationship with his father. And how much of it was an internal calling, a calling from the scripture that you're saying, or how much was it totally the opposite of what his,
you know,
his whole upbringing was, mm-hmm. what he's drilled in here with this, it's really the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, a personal thing,
yeah.
family.
Yeah, as maybe psychology analyze it. And I guess we don't know that. But I mean,
he never reconciled. You said that really struck me when you said that he never reconciled with his father.
No.
And his father broke with him, and that sounds like it was his breaking, ultimate breaking with his own father to move to a different father.
Yeah, and the different father was our Father who art in heaven. And the one incident I know about that after this that is. Oh, I have that written down someplace.
Well, 26, he was moving into adulthood, so that was sort of biological.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was one time when his father attacked him, and a poor person and defended him. It was a beggar, Albert, his father cursed him, saw his son nearby and just cried out curses, and then this beggar put his hands on Francis' head and blessed him. And, you know, those stories, we don't know if that's part of the legend or, you know, that's part of it. That's the work of scholars to do. Yeah.
In the time that he was prisoner of war, and I'm curious, it wasn't a Nelson Mandela period, but was it like a John McCain period? And what do you think about things like PTSD? Was he a victim of torture?
As far as I know, maybe, but the situation he was thrown into was a torture in itself, to be in a grim, wet, damp, disease-ridden place for, I have to look it up, how many months. It was a long time that he was there. And later stories had him being in that prison ministering to everybody and reconciling all the people that were mad at each other and kind of dancing around, sharing. And more likely, it was a time of real depression for him.
It sure would be easy to think of him as just plain old crazy if you saw him grow up and turn against all this wealth.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't pass the ELCA for ordination. He wouldn't pass all the psychological.
Dan, do we know about Francis's life and thought mainly through his own writings, through the writings of others about him, or some of each? Where do we get what we know to be historically accurate?
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of legend and myth too, but
mm-hmm.
how do scholars proceed?
Yeah, the comparison would be maybe with like a Mother Teresa. You know, the day she died, nobody doubted that someday she'll become a Roman Catholic saint.
Beatified, yeah.
Yeah, and that was probably even more clear when Francis died. So his followers, and next time we'll talk about all this delightful group of first followers of Francis.
Did he write much himself?
No. So right away they started writing down his words and the memories and the stories. So it was very close before a lot of legend had time. He wrote a few things. I'll read a few of his prayers. And he wrote letters that we have. He wrote letters to the political leaders. He wrote letters eventually to all of his brothers that were all over the world. And he wrote... And of course, his most famous writing was the Prayer of Creation, which is authentic St. Francis, and did as much for the Italian language as Luther's translation did for the German language.
And we have hymn versions of that, don't we,
mm-hmm.
in our hymnodies.
Yeah. time here, I'll read it in the English translation of the original. And so, good.
About the voices, were these waking? Was he awake when he heard the voices, or were these in dreams?
Yeah, the reports that they were like visions or dreams. And this is, it's kind of lost in mystery, you know, exactly what that would have been. But the very, very first writers recorded these, so it's not part of the later legendary material. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he reported having heard voices, mm-hmm, while he was awake during the day, or?
Oh, I think, well, the one before the cross was during the day, and the other when he was off to war, that was when he was sleeping, as far as we know. And you have to tread lightly on being too definite about these. Yeah.
Since Francis was such a literalist, that scene that you painted where he, in the courtroom, he lays down his clothes and the money, I wonder about, you know, if anyone asks of you for your cloak, you give them your tunic too, or, you know, Walter Wink, when he talks about that, you know, you kind of shame the oppressor by standing nude in front of them, right? I guess for Jews, it would be taboo. But
no.
But I still think for a cloth merchant who made all of his money by creating these beautiful clothes, and mm-hmm, here's your son standing in front of you nude, it's a source of shame.
Yeah, yeah, because life was clothing, mm-hmm, in a way, and then for him to be, so the shock probably wasn't so much the nudity, but the symbol, mm-hmm, that he was giving up everything. You know.
Raiment. Giving up raiment, yeah, and garments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This was one thing that fits into that, you brought up was Francis crazy. But this was a time of just spiritual death among the youth of Italy, of where everything was war and possessions and clothing. And there was it was a time of spiritual sadness, of more and more a sense among the youth of Italy that life has to be more than this. It was a time that was ripe for revival, as we would say it today. And it's like, and then put, if you're going to say faith words, faith words, if God chose Francis, you know, to be my prophet, God chose someone who was so delightful and such a comedian and such an entertainer and a preacher and also one who really did give up everything. And our three movements during these days will be, Francis goes through a number of deaths that later Luther would talk about as the theology of the cross. You know, there's a danger in making too many connections with Luther, but there are some.
I'm just going to make another connection with Siddhartha, that holding up. And
the what?
Siddhartha, the book, you know, of just the whole evolution. And there's another parallel there.
Yeah.
Walking a different path. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The time was ripe, mm-hmm, for another word to
I just find it very interesting that Matthew 10 was the verse, the Matthew 10 verse 5 through 10, at this time, as you talk about the social change and upheaval, and then Dominic Crossan does a lot of work in his scholarship about those verses in Matthew and Luke being the prime verses for Jesus' whole mission at another time of a different sort of social upheaval, but mm-hmm, it makes me wonder how central that is. And it's just interesting to note for me.
Yeah, I think it is central.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those those verses when the whole generation were kind of spiritually ready. As one old phrase, you know, that the powers were afraid there'd no be nobody left to fight the wars.
Right.
You know, because eventually we'll see that it's thousands and thousands who follow Francis.
Yeah, and today, where we are today.
Yeah, maybe, you know, then you ask questions, are there parallels today in a spiritual longing?
We might try to be practical and say, well, he should have distributed that wealth to the poor, which I think he did some of later, maybe, but this act was more a symbol and almost getting back at his father.
It was the best to say it was very decisive, you know, and who knows all the psychology involved in it, but immediately he used kind of comical words for his theology and his Christian practice, and this was, he called it the law of reciprocal containers, and that was, you take it from where it is and give it where it isn't. And that's what he did. His begging was not for himself, because he would gather brothers. So they had to work for their food. The begging was only for those who were hungry. Yeah, so that's...
I was interested in how you described the kind of the culture of war that was developing. Mm-hmm. Have you done more work on that and how it sounded like that warfare was becoming internally, it was internally needed for that culture at that time. Uh-huh. And that, do you know as to how, was that unique to that period or had it been developing in over centuries or?
I don't know, except my guess is with the rise of the city-states, you know, that the impetus for young people to go to war, you know, the building up of hatred of the other city, that would be my only guess, but I don't know that much. So. But certainly we know from Francis that this was the way to glory, and I don't know if it was more intense at this time. I would guess that it was.
We just finished Will and Ariel Durant's story of history, which is kind of a summary of the, whatever, 20 volume. No, it's the lessons of history, just a short one. Anyway, with regard to war, they say out of 3,400 years of history, there were only something like 250 that weren't considered war-filled years.
Yeah. Those of us who are men that were not part of a war, you know, we're a minority,
yes,
probably in history. I want to just share one. Oh, go ahead.
Just a question about his dream in which he heard the call to build the church, build my church. Did he later interpret that as meaning not restoring buildings, but doing the work of the church, the work of God, healing the sick and caring for the poor and so on? Did he reinterpret the meaning of build my church?
I think so, yeah. But I don't remember reading any kind of decisive time, because even after the Matthew 10, I think I'm going to check on that. I think he was still building churches. I'd like to just share this at the ending, that Francis did follow his dream of being a knight, but he just changed it all around. His imagination, you know, that he's now in a knightly court, and the God is the king, and then he sees his brothers now as the other knights as they come in this court, and he even has a lady every night as a lady, so Francis as a lady. And in his imagination through the rest of his life, he tries to woo his lady, who is a mythical figure called Lady Poverty. And once you start having no possessions, she starts getting crabby. So you have to keep wooing her. But then the theology that came out of the knightly court for Francis, and this will begin now to connect us to the animals, that he saw the whole creation as one medieval court, and the whole creation, every part, and the knightly court from the chivalry that he had grown up with was centered around the Italian word cortesia, which we don't have the perfect English translation, but courtesy would be close, and cortesia was the courtesy that every part of the court had for another part, including the animals in his court, that you would respect one another with a caring and a courtesy, and this would make a great knight. And we had a contest here to name when the hospital turned to, what is it?
Agave.
Yeah, I wanted Cortesia and I lost. Maybe the shed, the new shed. But isn't that it's a beautiful statement about the sense of interconnectedness, and that he got that. Well, we will continue tomorrow and check the board. I have no idea what time it is. If I'm not here, come and get me. Okay, thank you.